Well, hello everyone, it's another OneLiner.com podcast. I, as always, am Craig Eastman, and in Glasgow, Scott Morris.
Delighted to meet you.
And in Falkirk, Drew Tavendale.
Hello.
We've got three films to talk about tonight, so let's crack on. Based on a Stieg Larsson novel, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo revolves around the attempts of an uncle determined to uncover the truth behind the disappearance of his niece some 40 years previously. To this end, he's hired a disgraced journalist and a notorious computer hacker, hoping that between them they might penetrate the deceitful web of lies perpetrated by his own sinister family and the events that took place on their private island all those years ago. The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo has drawn universally favourable reviews, though it has also garnered a reputation as a tough watch. Of particular acclaim is Noomi Rapace, I hope I've pronounced that correctly, central performance as the wayward teen hacker, but scenes of her sexual abuse at the hands of a corrupt state guardian have given the film an incredibly dark edge. Is this just another case of controversy baiting, Scott, or is there genuine substance to be had here?
Well, there's elements of it. Calling Noomi's character Elizabeth Troubled would really be doing her a disservice, but how she gets into this kind of dark, alienated state that she's in is a kind of recurring subplot, and it echoes into the main plot as well. It is quite well tied in and integrated into the guts of the film, so it's not completely exploitative. As murder mystery go, it's a pretty effective one. The cinematography on occasion's absolutely breathtaking, the characters are interesting, well acted, and are fleshed out with enough surrounding detail to avoid them feeling like conduits for the plot to run through. It keeps up a decent pace, and there's never a dull moment. I mean, it's not perfect, and I think it's probably because there is never a dull moment. I don't think I'm being too controversial in saying that both the investigative techniques and the events occurring to the investigators are on the borders of believability. Not impossible, though. There's enough unpleasant people in the world to think that something like this could be happening, but it's pretty unlikely. The genius of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo is that it doesn't actually stop for long enough to have you think about that aspect of it in any deep way, and it's not really a film that actually demands any other deep inspection once you've left it, so it kind of gets away with it. I enjoyed it wholeheartedly. I don't think there's much more point saying any more than that, and there's no point waiting for the Hollywood remake to go and see it, so yes, see it now if you can.
Yes, see it preferably in its original format with the original cast before someone rapes and pillages it. So is it actually as dark as everyone's making out, Scott? Because I've only managed to watch about the first 10 minutes of it.
Well, yes, it is. There's a lot of very unpleasant things happening in it. And I was a little conflicted watching it, because a part of me was sort of getting caught up and swept away with the kind of flow of it and going, ooh, that's very nasty, and sort of feeling for the characters involved. But there was actually a bit of me at the back of my mind going, well, yeah, it's just a little bit of controversy baiting. That's not too likely. That's pushing everything a little bit to the extremes. And if it was portraying itself as a gritty slice of ultra-realism, then it wouldn't fly, and it would be simply over the top. The fact that it is a work of fiction and it is a murder mystery,
It's
clearly not a documentarian effort, kind of saves it from that. I don't think it's a particularly useful criticism. I mean, certainly it's a lot darker edged than most of these kind of thrillers that you're going to see. It makes Shutter Island look very light and breezy by comparison. But it is very good, and it's very engaging, and I liked it an awful lot.
Wolves did it!
That's correct, they did.
Hot off the heels of Diary of the Dead, George Romero sees out over four decades of zombie movie-making with Survival of the Dead, in which the inhabitants of an island off the coast of the US fend off zombie invasion while holding out for a cure that might return their loved ones to the land of the living. For some time now, Romero's movies have been living on the increasingly thin pretense of a deeper social subtext, but many suspect he has finally, well, shat the nest. I know you guys were never as enamoured previously with anything probably since the original Night of the Living Dead, but I actually quite enjoyed 2005's Land of the Dead. I can't say I particularly enjoyed this one, though.
No, nor did I. I'm actually got quite a soft spot for all of the original trilogy, Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, and Day of the Dead, back when Romero really left about a decade between each of his films, which allowed them to be somewhat better. And I had been left rather cold by Land of the Dead, and so missed Diary of the Dead entirely. But we went back to a bit of the Zombie Master's work with this, and I feel kind of frustrated by this film, because there are elements of fun in it. First of all, the important thing to note is that this is a B-movie, and a more or less straight-to-video B-movie. And you have to bear that in mind, because it looks every bit of the pennies it doesn't have to spend.
How true.
That said, there are some decidedly dodgy bits of makeup and CGI in it. But if you know that that's, well, partly the point and partly all they're able to do, you can set that aside and just enjoy it. There are some quite inventive zombie deaths.
It's always been kind of part of the charm, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that's possibly what was wrong with when things were almost Land of the Dead, it was just trying to be a bit too glossy.
Too big budget, yeah.
Whereas this, I mean, it's got some amusing zombie deaths, a zombie scalping, amusing attacks with both a fire extinguisher and a bolt flare, and other comedy bits of zombies doing daft things. Unfortunately, those are few and far between. There's far too much time spent soul-searching and people with incredibly dodgy Irish accents talking about potatoes, I assume. That's how it entered my head. Potato, potato, begorra was most of the dialogue, I think. It's that sort of cliched Irish accent.
Ah, you wouldn't be disparaging the age-old enmity between the O'Flynns and the Mulligans or whoever the fuck
Maldoons.
It was.
No, not at all. It spends too much time on this silly feud that's got no substance. And yeah, it's disappointing. There are moments that are really quite entertaining. If it just gone all out humans versus zombies and sort of all various different entertaining ways of dispatching the dead, then I think it would be quite entertaining. It gives you glimpses of them, then just sort of grinds back to a halt again, and then, yeah, it's not great. It's probably, even if you're a big Romero fan, I wouldn't go out of my way to watch it.
Yeah.
Because there's just not enough zombie action in it, basically.
Yeah, it struck me that the zombies are almost incidental. It's people bickering constantly and whatnot. And whereas in the previous films there's been this real sense of impending dread, there's just, you know, relentless wave of zombie after relentless wave sort of thing. I don't know if it was just a budgetary constraint, but it's admirable that in this day and age of the fast zombie now, that Romero's kind of stuck to his original sort of shambling slow zombies, but they always relied on sheer numbers. And I don't know if it's just a budgetary thing in this, but there seem to be about 12 zombies in the whole movie. Everybody's pretty well armed. There's no sense of threat at any point. You know, got a zombie will shamble on here and there, and someone will sort of almost grudgingly sort of, oh, fucking hell, another one. Bang. And there was very little to actually make this a zombie movie for me. Am I just being daft, Scott?
I couldn't say I liked this film an awful lot, but I found it completely inoffensive. But 3 days later, I can barely remember anything about it. And I imagine 2 weeks from now, I won't remember anything about it at all. You're right, and it's kind of minimising its zombie action. Right, I've never really bought into the whole Romero is the arch satirist thing that people are talking about Day of the Dead, particularly all this. Oh, it's a satire on consumerism and all that. I think the idea was at some point Romero went, wouldn't it be cool to have zombies in a mall? And that's what he made. This time I think he's thought, wouldn't it be cool to have a Western, but with zombies? So what you've got basically is a remake of Fistful of Dollars, but with zombies, which on the face of it isn't a bad idea.
It's no worse an idea than his previous ones, but...
Given that Fistful of Dollars was a remake of Yojimbo, it opens up the possibility of a samurai film with zombies, which would be the best thing ever.
So there we are. There is light at the end of the tunnel. But you're not seriously going to recommend this to anyone, though, are you?
No, not really. As I say, I found it completely inoffensive. I think if you are a massive Romero fan, it's an inoffensive way to spend 90 minutes. I don't think it's going to ruin your opinion of the man, but I didn't really like it an awful lot. It's okay. I've no massive complaints against it. Okay, it's a bit shambolic and hokey, but you kind of expect that these days from any sort of vaguely horror-related thing. It does have a bit too much going on with the perhaps delusions of grandeur of thinking that it is a proper Western that's talking about people's attitudes towards zombies rather than just having zombies going around eating people. I think it's a Romero's missing his mark here. No, certainly not Romero's best.
Not by a long chalk, I'd wager. Our third and final film that we're going to discuss this time is Legion, and I'm not going to bother trying to introduce it because I've gone nowhere near it, so Scott is going to brief us.
There is a remote diner / petrol station in the middle of the desert owned by grumpy old Dennis Quaid. He's assisted by a few people who are of very little interest apart from his son, Jeep, and his heavily pregnant waitress, Charlie.
Did you say his son, Jeep?
His son, Jeep, played by Lucas Black. His son, Jeep. Just so you're sure about it, his son is called Jeep.
Jeep.
It's a fairly silly name. And what seems to be an unusually busy day, at any rate, gets a whole lot busier once the entire armies of darkness descend upon the diner. It turns out that God's had a bit too much of this whole humanity lark and has decided to wipe us all out because we're scum. That's fair enough, I guess. One of the more unusual visitors is the Archangel Michael, played by Paul Bettany, who for some reason has decided to side with humanity in this big old reboot of the planet Earth. So he's trying to act as a guardian for the child that Charlie is carrying because she will grow up to be the saviour of mankind again. Ooh, big ideas. As it turns out, the strange, pointy-limbed, droppy-jawed zombie monstrosities that God has unleashed upon us for some reason are quite susceptible to things like gunfire, so it bounces into something of a a point defence of the diner until they can find a way to get out there and retreat safely. The trailer for this film looked quite exceptionally terrible, and I suppose it subverted my expectations somewhat by not being completely irretrievable. Not that it's actually any good at all, but there's a few slightly surprising elements to it. It does have a few amusing lines throughout it. Once you get through the bombastically high concept plot, it settles into a mildly entertaining Terminator slash Zulu slash every zombie film ever groove. But there are problems. Bethany is kind of boring in his role. If he is going to play an angel, something completely ethereal and otherworldly, he ought to be something other than a guy who's a bit sullen. So that doesn't particularly fly. Actually, the one real problem I have with this film, everything else is more or less slightly below average but not too worthy of mockery, but the script, I think, is in no way meant to be taken seriously. There's some quite clever visual gags, there's some decent lines. I think it's actually a reasonably funny script. The problem is that it's got to a director who wants to treat it with absolute seriousness, and it's all delivered so straight-faced and with little sense of self-awareness at all that it just makes everything seem really silly and less enjoyable than by rights it ought to be. That is essentially my problem with it. It kind of undermines the whole thing. Obviously, it's a really stupid concept for a film. It's insanely high concept, but if it was just playing it as a something of a laugh, it probably would have got away with it.
Yeah.
As it stands, no. No, it doesn't. It falls kind of flat. As I say, it's nothing like as dreadful as I feared that it might be, and I can't really hate a film which has an old woman getting sconed in the head with a frying pan thrown by a guy with a hook for a hand. But even with that in mind, I can't recommend it, and it's got to be a fairly bad film if that can't save a film.
A human utensil rack attacking an old lady. Drew, that's got to be worth £7 of anyone's money. Come on.
No, I didn't find it enjoyable in any way whatsoever. And to be entirely reductious about it, basically it's a shit version of Assault on Precinct 13 with added religious twirly bits. And it's just, I just found it incredibly dull. I didn't find anything funny. It's not served well also by having, well, as Scott said, Paul Bettany playing this ethereal being as just a grumpy bloke. Added to that, one of the world's least charismatic actors, Dennis Quaid, putting in an especially bad turn.
Go on, it's a perfect role for Dennis Quaid. He's grumpy and likeable. I can't think of any other role that he's more suited to play.
Possibly not. I just found it dull. Paul Bettany also doesn't think it needs to be taken seriously, though, because he said to, in a press conference, I think, if you're looking for a serious discussion on religion, it's not. It's about guns and explosions. But the problem is, the guns and explosions are few and far between. There's largely, there's a shotgun fight, then there's half an hour of them fanning about inside a diner, being very, very dull people that you simply don't care about whether they survive or not. And then there's another few shots fired. It just left me absolutely cold and wondering where exactly the Legion was, because, you know, Legion, there should be a huge number of people attacking this little diner, and there's basically a group.
I was going to say, susceptible to bullets or otherwise, you would hope there would be sufficient numbers just to overwhelm them.
Yeah, there's like a handful attack them at first, and then there's a slightly larger group more or less stand about outside, but at no point do you think there's an overwhelming Legion attacking them. It's a very oddly named film, since it seems to have nothing to do with the content whatsoever.
This god chap seems to be a bit short-sighted if he hasn't thought about bullets either, isn't he?
Yes, I'm also wondering, if God is as powerful as these films suggest he is, why does he need anybody to do it for him?
But, yes.
Anyway, it's, as Paul Bettany says, it's not really meant to be about that. It's meant to be about guns and explosions, but it doesn't really have money of either, so it's just to be avoided. It's just plain bad, as somebody in IMDb wrote.
What's Paul Bettany playing at? Because he's surely one of our nation's most talented and likeable actors. And yet, did he not make two films back-to-back with this director? Or certainly he's made another one since.
Is he going to be in Priest afterwards?
Yes, film? Surely the man can sniff a clunker from that kind of a distance.
I don't know. I suppose he's got a mortgage to pay, hasn't he?
What a brilliant and succinct response. I don't know.
It's the kind of insight you listen to this podcast for, though, isn't it?
Yes, it certainly is. On that note, we'll leave you with the recommendation that you check out The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo and neither of the other two, essentially. Thanks for listening. As always, I've been Craig, and Scott was Scott.
I certainly was.
And Drew was most certainly Drew.
Maybe he wasn't.
Maybe he wasn't, yes. Let's find out next week.
Yes, yeah, so, okay, bye. That was odd.
Oh, why did you remove the air of mystery there, Drew? The suspense.
I probably just got stunned by that, to suddenly a moment of deep introspection, thinking,
yes,
am I?
You created a, you created
sure
a
of
moment of high suspense, and then you ruined it. We could have let that. We could have left the listeners on tenterhooks.
Cliffhanger.
Cliffhanger indeed. All right, guys, take care, and we'll speak to you soon. What was going through your head then, man?